Welcome to this week's installment of the Mystery Stone Podcast. Once again, I am your MC, CJ, here with...
Once again, name is Mike. How you guys doing?
Well, I'm doing okay. We dropped the...
We dropped the title today. You know, you have to do a little balance between it being cheesy, original, annoying. So right now, I'm just going straight flat out, Mike. It's just me with you guys today. How you guys doing?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of cool because the topic we're going to talk about today is really about the basis of things. And we're getting back to the basic names.
The basics.
The basics.
Yes.
I kind of feel like we probably should have talked about this topic a lot sooner than we did. But we're getting to it now.
At the same time, I guess it does kind of fall under like mathematics and things along those lines. So, yeah, I mean, either way, at least we're getting to it now, you know, instead of like way far in the future.
Yeah, I mean, but like it's crazy because like it has implications in magical practice and it has.
Yeah, it does.
Well, it's in everything.
Yeah, pretty much in everything. Yeah, the entire universe, the cosmos, right? This topic I own right now.
You name it. Like
makes everything up. Yeah.
I dug deep, and I actually have like a really good example of where this stuff pops up, and I'm super excited to talk about it because it's extra, extra shallow. But it's in there.
Like, extra shallow, like a puddle.
Oh, it's really like it's a puddle. It's not even a puddle.
It's not a puddle.
It's like that thin layer of water on top of ice that makes you slip a little bit.
Damn.
Like it's so shallow.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. But this like extra deep concept is within it. And that's kind of what made me excited about it.
So. Yeah. Yeah, this is a topic I'm excited to speak about, at least to the best of my ability, for this fundamental intro on it. The sacred geometry is going to be the title today. And sacred geometry pretty much is pretty sacred.
Yeah, and after you listen to this episode and you're sitting there going, well, they didn't really cover very much. There will be a part two and more
three,
than likely
four.
A part three, but we're going to space it out because there's so much to talk to you guys about, and it's a lot, especially early on. In this is going to be episode 16, not counting our Philosopha talk.
Yeah.
We feel like it's time to start getting into some more of the deep stuff.
Yeah. In terms of sacred geometry, this is a concept that's been around for a long, 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 long time, and goes far back into antiquity. And you can find sacred geometry all throughout various spiritual traditions, religious traditions. You can find it like embedded and imprinted upon like ancient cultures, like statues or artifacts or temples, and the floors of certain sacred sites, and it's just pretty much been a universal concept ever since it's been discovered, or, you know, not really necessarily discovered, but unraveled, or able to put into, like, human forms with symbols that we use and things along those lines.
The one thing I could not find on this topic was, like, where it started.
It apparently started, the origin apparently started about 2000 to around... I think anywhere between 2000 and 1000 BC, and stemmed from like Egyptian times and Mesopotamian times.
Okay.
That's the earliest recorded that I could find, or that I've remember.
Yeah, I mean,
seeing.
To be fair, I didn't really dig deep into the origins. I like really like researched like the basic concepts and like the individual little things that come with it, but like I was sitting there going, "Man, I really kind of should have did some history cuz that's sort of my thing." And I didn't do any of that, and I was just like, "Oh, I wonder where this even comes from."
Yeah, and even that's kind of obscure because, like, even though it's purported to have stemmed about 2000 BC or so, like, these concepts are, like I was saying, it's just they're so prevalent and universal that to actually find the earliest source period, like when it actually officially started to become unraveled and discovered in terms of the human mind, that's definitely I feel like it was probably a lot more earlier than 2000 BC, but you know, in terms of like written history and recordings, that's what it says.
It really is like an embodiment of like as above, so below.
Yeah, certain aspects for sure, yeah. And even in like Egyptian times, you know, like they used those pyramids. I mean, I don't think they constructed the pyramids. That's all their debate.
We are definitely going to talk about that.
Yeah,
not far future.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, a lot of people think like the pyramids, you know, the Egyptians built them, but there's definitely a lot more evidence saying that they didn't. But that's like I was saying, that's another topic. But yeah, like as we see with a lot of origins, a lot of things, metaphysical or spiritual or alchemical, well, even, you know, alchemy period, it all comes from Egypt. So it would make sense that a lot of the origins of, you know, the sacred geometric arts or the way it's depicted today would have came from that time period. It would just make sense. But at the end of the day, you know, sacred geometry, it's pretty much like, it's pretty much the expression of how everything in nature comes into existence. It's pretty much like the underlying display of how the matrix operates, in a sense, how everything's unified, how everything's complete, how everything's a whole. And through certain sacred geometric shapes and forms, just all the geometries that we're going to be speaking about today, and even involving this a certain kind of spiral. If someone's not versed in these things before coming into this episode, they're definitely going to take out of it a lot more unified look as to how the universe operates, or, you know, just all the patterns that, you know, might have evaded the eye, you know, just when looking around your daily life, because we can get really caught up in ordinary everyday lives and, you know, get caught up in work and friendships and you know, traumas and hardships and all these things, and in terms of looking around and actually seeing what's in front of you and recognizing patterns outside of all the tumultuous tides of existence, can be a struggle sometimes, especially if you're not knowing what to look for. So once more, if people aren't, you know, attuned to this mode of seeing things, your guys are definitely in for a treat, because you're going to see things definitely vastly different after today's episode. So
I'll start off here with a little... I got a hard definition off of, I think it was Wikipedia.
Wikipedia?
I hate Wikipedia, but when I searched it, it was like right at the top of the Google search.
Yeah.
There was a definition. I was like, I like definitions.
Scroll, click.
Yeah. It says, sacred geometry ascribes symbolic and sacred meanings to certain geometric shapes and proportions associated with the belief that a god is the geometer of the world.
Yeah, in certain traditions, actually, you know, Freemasonry, other traditions, or even anyone who's metaphysically minded, they can view God or the mind of God as being like the ultimate sacred geometer, someone who constructs the universe out of shapes and simple forms, and then just gets more complex and complex and complex, and fractals and fractals and fractals, from the smallest, you know, ideal into, you know, physical manifestation. And you see like fractals of shapes and fractals of ratios and certain inherent patterns that you can see occurring from the micro to the macro, from the quantum level to, you know, the massive physical level. So in a sense, like that's why we're considering these geometries sacred, and in a sense, all geometry is sacred. But there's more, there's certain aspects of geometry that we'll be covering today that are more universally recognized as being under quote-unquote sacred geometry.
There was one more definition, too.
Mm-hmm.
This one is, it's also a term for the algorithm, matrix, illusion, or simulation of reality, which makes me think a little bit of like simulation theory, which is also something else I want to talk about in the future.
Yeah, that's which is like so similar to all these metaphysical minded, you know, spottings of the universe. It's kind of like another way of, it's kind of like a, I guess, kind of like a left brain version of like... understanding the illusion of Maya, or like the matrix of existence, I guess, to some degree, if you're like a computer tech minded, you know, like the simulation. At the same time, it can be looked at as like an illusion. It can be looked at like a hologram, you know what I mean? So it's just another term for, you know, the illusion of existence, you know, before you peel back the layers of what you thought was reality. Yeah, it's an interesting topic too.
Yeah.
But yeah, sacred geometry. And geometry has been used throughout many spiritual traditions, and its implementations have been vast, and we're going to discover just how many uses geometry has. Like geometry and math and all these things are essential to the construction of nature, of reality, as you know, to the universe. You know, math itself is pretty much the program of reality, that like the things behind the scene that you can't see, but you can write it down in symbols and kind of decrypt the encryption and discover what these programs are doing in actuality and cause and effect. And even Plato, the renowned and famous Greek philosopher, he had in his Plato's Academy, which was a place in Athens, Greece, where a lot of the a lot of people came to learn and learn the higher arts of philosophy and geometry and just like the myths, kind of like a mystery school to some degree, in a sense, you know, at least under Plato and Platonism and the philosophies that he taught. On top of his academy, the words were written somewhere along the lines of like above the temple door to enter the academy. That is, it said something along the lines of "Let no one ignorant of geometry enter." So, even to Plato, geometry was of massive, massive importance. And of course, Euclid, who his book Elements. I forget which philosopher, or mathematician, or where he's from. It's probably Greece as well. Like so many other philosophers, but Euclid, he had a book called Elements, and in the Elements, he describes a lot of very important geometric forms, a lot of mathematical concepts. I believe Abraham Lincoln had that book next to his bed set. On his bed table next to his bed, so he can keep his mind sharp. And at one point in time, Euclid's Elements was the most sold book in the entire world, more than the Bible. And I think those two rival it even to this day to some degree. It's a book I personally always wanted to get, but it's a long book, you know what I mean? It deals generally with just pure mathematics, but it's a beautiful book nonetheless, and it's very long, and I think there's six sections to it. So Plato, huge geometry fan. Pythagoras, he even went further in terms of sacred geometry. Just so many people. So I guess to start off,
is that where we get that Pythagorean theorem?
The Pythagorean theorem, I think it's a squared plus b squared equals c squared. That right. Came from a triangle. That kind of dealt with some type of sacred geometrical forms, but not necessarily sacred geometry.
Well, I'm saying that it came from Pythagoras, like
what the Pythagorean theorem?
Yeah.
Okay, it did. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Math is not my strong suit.
No, I understand.
Geometry was one of the few forms of math that I did get an A in.
That's good. That's fitting for this episode.
Yeah. Everything else, like fractions.
Yeah.
Like, and that sounds really weird, but like written mathematics, like I can do, because I'm a chef, right?
Yeah.
So I can do fractions in my head, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
But to actually write them out and like show you the process of like dividing fractions or multiplying them, and it's like you got like a little diagonal, and like I can't
The symbology and like
I can't do it. I cannot do the written process and get it correct.
Okay,
but if you tell me, hey, we need 3 1/4 cups of this, and then double that over here, then give me 20% of it over here. I can do that in my head, but I can't do it in a written format.
Hey, well, at least you can do it in your head, because I guess at the end of the day, that's what matters most. In terms of getting something done, maybe.
Yeah, but like once the alphabet gets involved, though.
Yeah, game over.
Forget it.
I was always very good at math in school. I mean, at least up until high school, I was in like algebra. I was in advanced mathematics up until high school, and then high school I stopped caring, of course. But math. I always loved math a lot, and sacred geometry I got into a long time ago when I started first investigating like the mysteries of existence, or you know, like what things are made up of and things beyond the veil and how to see things differently and all those things. And I was having certain revelations around like my early 20s as well that kind of led me down this path too. So this is definitely a foundational episode to listen to, it's just fascinating, all these different concepts and how everything spawns from them, or can spawn from them, or how you can at least see how everything in existence can spawn from a lot of these things in theory.
Well, yeah, they say that this is the unification of science, spirituality, self, other, left and right brain, and inner and outer, micro and macro.
Yeah. I have nothing else to say on the topic after that in terms of an intro, because you could say that sacred geometry encompasses consciousness. You could, because of, you know, everything is consciousness and how consciousness works. You know, we can get into that a little bit later. The physical manifestations in the world, everything involves geometry, mathematics. And so it's just a language of the universe. It's a language of evolution. It's the language of God's program for existence. And it's highly fascinating. So
yeah, they say they I read that if you are able to grasp the concept of sacred geometry, it gives you like a window and like maybe even like a doorway to aligning yourself with the source and like understanding that a little more in depth. So like meditating on certain geometric concepts and whatnot is what was the word that was used? It was like a very strong way of
to like transcend, like just ordinary consciousness or thinking.
Yeah, they say it's like a foundational concept to transcendence. So, you know, when you come to these, like, I mean, at this point, like even like in our philosophy talks or like when we were talking to David S. Deer, we kind of gotten like really deep philosophical thought on a lot of things, and then like it all stems back to sacred geometry.
Yeah, in essence, it really does. And some of the most basic shapes in sacred geometry goes back to the guy we were just talking about recently, Plato, and his work Timaeus. I think that's how you say this, pronounce it. Plato had numerous works out. I have his completed works. I forget the exact author, but it's the best translation you could possibly get. I'm gonna have to try to figure out what it is and maybe plug it in here at the end or sometime during this podcast. But nonetheless, Plato wrote about these five solids that he considered, that he called the Platonic solids, or at least they became to be known the Platonic solids. And these five Platonic solids are as follows. The first one is a tetrahedron. And if you guys have any type of, if you guys don't know what these things look like, it'd be nice to have like some type of, like, maybe search it up on Google. If you'd like type in like five Platonic solids, if you have the capability to do so at the moment, so you have like a visual as to what they look like, it'll really help in terms of all these terms we're going to be speaking of during this episode. But if not, you know, we'll try to describe it the best as we can on air. But in terms of the tetrahedron, and you're going to see that the suffix hedron is at the end of all these words. And that just means face. So tetrahedron means four faces. And the tetrahedron just kind of looks like a pyramid. And I'm going to go in order from least amount of sides to the most amount of sides in terms of the five Platonic solids. And real quick, in terms of the Platonic solids, all these are geometric shapes that are supposed to be the building blocks or fundamental building blocks to everything in existence. And that is so because these are the geometric shapes that are all symmetrical and have the same surface. I can't even think of the right word right now. Like the faces on these shapes are all equal to each other. They're all symmetrical all around. First one's tetrahedron. It's like a pyramid. Four faces, four sides. The second one's a cube or the hexahedron that has six faces. You know, kind of like the cube, kind of can open up into a cross, and that's its own little significance. The third one is the octahedron. That one has eight faces. That one's just hard to describe, period. The fourth one is the dodecahedron that has 12 faces. That's another one that's harder to describe through a mic. And the last one is the icosahedron. That one has 20 faces. And if anyone plays Magic the Gathering out there, there's a certain life counter die that you use during that game. And that has 20 sides to it, which represents 20 life points that you have in Magic the Gathering. And that's an icosahedron, just with numbers on it. So if, that's a little depiction of that.
If any of you play Dungeons & Dragons, you literally hold the entire set in your hand.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
What? That's crazy.
Yeah, Dungeons & Dragons uses the entire set to play everything from the three-sided die to the 20.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah, I've never played Dungeons & Dragons, so...
We should change that.
It sounds pretty interesting, yeah.
Well, maybe not necessarily Dungeons & Dragons. Well, no, D&D's fun.
Yeah.
D&D's fun. I got better games, though.
Yeah, there's a lot of magical aspects to these games too, those are the five Platonic solids.
And like with these particular solids, they say those make up this universal language of light, sound, color, vibration, relationship, and form. You'll see it like you said, in like a lot of architecture. And there's like some prominent architecture types that you really find this stuff in. And it's like temples, mosques, megaliths, monuments, your churches. Like even Christian churches utilize the concept of holy geometry or sacred geometry. It depends who you talk to. I did find people calling it holy geometry.
Holy geometry?
Yeah.
Interesting. I never heard of that one. I guess it makes sense. Sacred, holy, whatever.
Divine. In the magical practice aspect, you'll see it in altars, temenoi, and tabernacles.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, outdoor locations, what would be a good one? Like, groves. Or, like, if you have, like, a specific... There's this form of meditation that does rock stacking. What the heck is that called?
Yeah, what is that? Where it's, like, a whole bunch of, like... rocks.
My gosh.
Somehow just chilling on top of each other.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pictures of that. They do that.
They, a lot of people use it as like an art form, but it is a form of meditation as well. And a lot of people will do arrangements with these things. And then there's a lot of sacred geometry within that.
Hmm.
Crystal grids.
Yeah. Crystal grids. Often use Metatron's Cube, which we're going to speak about in a little bit. I mean, that's just one of the crystal grids. In terms of the architecture, like CJ brought up, in Greece, the Pantheon, the ancient Pantheon, was created out of sacred geometry. I think they specifically used the...
you mean the Parthenon?
I think it's called the Pantheon.
A Pantheon is a group of deities.
Huh, maybe it's the Parthenon.
It's the Parthenon.
Yeah, it's lack of sleep's getting to me, huh?
It is. That's okay. You know, like, for real, I called it the Pantheon forever, too.
Really? That's not what it's called.
No. A Pantheon is a cluster of gods.
I've heard of that before, yeah. There's, like, you know, Greek Pantheon, this Pantheon.
Yeah, because I remember the very first time I was ever corrected on that myself, and we were playing Minecraft, and we were looking for something to build. I am one of those nerds. and this was years ago, and I was like, let's build the Pantheon, and they're like... Huh? The Pantheon. And then one of my friends was like, do you mean the Parthenon, you moron?
Parthenon. Yeah. Actually, let me see right now. You're definitely right. I just checked it up right now. Parthenon. Man, I was completely wrong. Yeah. I'm about to mislead my freaking viewers, man.
Hey, that's what it's about. We're human and we're designed to make mistakes.
No, I know. But yeah, okay. So it is the Parthenon found in Greece. And then also, of course, like I mentioned, the pyramids in Egypt uses vast amounts of sacred geometry. And they use things involved with the production of the pyramids that they claim that we just recently discovered, like pi and phi and all those other things that can kind of go into the realm of sacred geometry in a sense. And like, because it's like a very ambiguous what true sacred geometry really is, like what one attributes to a sacred geometric form or you know, idea in mathematics, you know, another culture or tradition might not bring in. So we're just going to bring in the, you know, just the foundational things. So yeah, and in terms of nature, you could find and I'm going to go to kind of just specifics in terms of geometry, because all these geometric shapes are all symmetrical, and they all follow along with the sacred geometrical forms that we're going to be talking about here. So just any type of significant geometry in general, I'm going to touch upon a little bit here and there in terms of nature. Like you can see, like, you know, like bees, when bees make their honeycomb, they all utilize the hexagon, which kind of follows the cube. In the five platonic solids, and it's one of the most toughest and most adhered to structure, which is why bees naturally, when making honeycomb, they construct their honeycomb, and it's all in this hexagonal shape every time. And it's crazy to see, because it's so symmetrical, and like how they're just programmed to do that. Also, snowflakes are always six-sided. Of course, there's not never one the same snowflake, but it's always in a hexagon form, some type of variation of the hexagon. In terms of the carbon molecule that makes up the diamond, that's also a hexagonal form. As you can see, there's a lot of hexagons in nature. That's it's pretty fascinating. Even when you take psychedelics, say like ayahuasca or psilocybin mushrooms, you know, quote unquote magic mushrooms, or you know, LSD or lysergic diethylamide, like anything that's or dimethyltryptamine, which is in ayahuasca. A lot of people experience having altered states or heightened states of consciousness where they're seeing geometric forms surrounding them, and even to the point where these geometric forms might be like intelligent and communicating with them, almost as if they're like angelic forces or some type of universal force that's communicating with them in geometric form. So that's fascinating stuff. I mean, I personally have never done ayahuasca. I've done mushrooms various times and LSD various times and other hallucinogenics. And I've experienced my own mystical experiences on those things. And you definitely get to see geometry definitely to some degree. But in terms of ayahuasca, I heard that's a major one that people see this stuff on. I unfortunately have never taken ayahuasca. That's a dream.
We're seeing geometry and sacred geometry constantly, and we're subconsciously aware of it at all times.
Yeah,
they're kind of like that thing I talked about that's like super shallow, but I thought was really cool because it uses this extra deep concept.
Yeah,
it's a human attraction. The concept of beauty follows sacred geometry to a T.
Follows the golden ratio of the golden number.
Well, yeah, that's the golden ratio for women's beauty is like 1.6 or 1.7, but the thing that I'm talking about is called the Marcotte Beauty Mask. Okay.
Hmm.
And this is a mask. It's see-through. And over it is a series of geometric shapes. And they place it on your face. And depending on how your facial structure lines up with this the geometry on this mask actually determines how attractive you are perceived on a general level.
I can see this being a disaster for a lot of people.
this has been a thing for many years now. I actually learned about this initially in high school, which is what prompted me to look it up for this podcast. I was like, wait, wow. I know something about this. Like, I remember learning this in an English class back in high school with Mr. Bazone.
Bazone.
I love that guy.
Shout out.
That dude was dope. I hope he's still teaching. He was the bomb.
And what is this called again? What type of mask?
The Marcotte Beauty Mask.
Marcotte.
Marcuardt.
Okay.
Yeah. Obviously, the concept of beauty is to the individual.
Yeah.
But there are general rules that apply. Like if you have a nose the size of a water bottle.
We still love you, but I mean,
somebody out there, that's going to be their thing. Look, no matter what,
just the way you said that, I really don't care.
No matter what, it's somebody's fetish, no exceptions.
Yeah, of course. I mean,
plus points if you can tell me where that rule comes from.
I mean, I have my imperfections. Everyone's got their imperfections. Yeah, it is
but
what it is.
This mask in particular.
Yeah.
Like, if you were going to try to be like a model or like television or like a personality that's in the public and things, this mask helps determine how well the public will receive your concept of like your individual beauty. And it works very well for the general public. And I'm not saying, I'm just like stressing that because I don't want to like anyone who's sitting here like, well, I'm beautiful. Yeah, I'm sure you are.
Yeah, you're definitely beautiful.
You know what?
You're definitely beautiful.
If you look in the mirror and say I'm beautiful, you are one step ahead of me. So,
and believe me, everyone listening, you guys are absolutely beautiful, no matter what the hell you look like. At the end of the day, it's a vessel. Who cares? if we're talking about certain exaggerated body parts, like, honestly, I don't care. It is what it is.
Yeah, like whatever.
Never a judgment.
This is just a concept that's out.
Yeah, there. Yeah.
It's not my personal belief or anything like that. Mm-hmm. What I consider attractive, not the general public opinion of what attractiveness really is. So there's that. But
I think that definitely works for you then.
Yeah, whatever.
Not too many vultures out there.
Hmm?
Not too many vultures trying to get the gem. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. No, for real though. But like, or at least what I consider a gem.
100%.
Anyway, like.
Yeah.
So the mask, I thought it like, cause like, that's what I said. It said it's super shallow. It is super shallow. Like it doesn't get any more shallow.
Like I'd be like, I could see that like destroying people. Like say like if it has, like someone has like low self-esteem to begin with.
It's wet origami paper shallow.
Yeah. And then they put this thing on their face, like just having some hope that like they're perceived as beautiful. And then you're definitely right about yourself. You're definitely not beautiful to the public eye.
You like put it on your face and look in the mirror and just be like, oh crap, I knew it.
Yeah. Yeah. But at the end of the day, it's a lie. It's a lie. You know, this is all based off of nature's standards. So,
I just thought it was a really interesting concept that they were able to use.
Yeah.
Geometry in this way. To build a tool that overall works for the most part. Like in a public poll, like, do you consider this face beautiful? The majority would be like, yes. Or like, do you consider this face unattractive? And they'd be like, yes. And like the mask works ratio.
Yeah. 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 And anyway, you were saying like the mask deals with the golden ratio by chance. Did you say that?
No. You brought up the golden ratio. Okay. I just know what the golden ratio is.
Okay.
And honestly, though, when it comes to that sort of mask, I really feel like that depends on the concept of like human evolution. Because like, if you go back to like the medieval times,
mm-hmm.
people had humongous foreheads.
Yeah,
was a big like they had big ass foreheads. Like mm-hmm. in this mask, you wouldn't even be able. They would be like, no,
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting because even like our mouths were smaller. I mean, we're bigger back then. Like our mouths are a lot more crunched nowadays compared to how it used to be, yeah, which is so why our teeth get all messed up.
As our physical form evolves and whatnot, depending on like where we're at and like what we're doing, you know, obviously the geometry on what would be considered attractive would change drastically.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, it was, what was I looking at? I was looking at an article, I think, on, like, bog people or something like that. And they, like, were doing, this was a beautiful woman. And, like, they reconstructed her. And I was like, she looks like a cave lady. And I was like, oh. I'm like, okay. And then, like, they did, like, a reconstruction of, like, a whole bunch of other people from the same time period. And I'm like, yeah. We had enormous foreheads back then.
Wow.
Like, yeah, they were huge. Like, full hands, like.
That's serious?
Oh yeah, man. Like if you put in like bog people and you look up the recreation of their faces.
Look like ETs, like the Greys.
They had huge foreheads.
Heads.
Well, more like Neanderthal type. Like it looked like it was receding from that real prominent brow, mm-hmm. but like the forehead was still massive. So
interesting.
Obviously this mask is going to change. I don't know how often the standard human feature changes. Like mm-hmm. I guess we can look at what comes from like even every decade, like if you think like back in the 70s, having a bubble butt was not something you wanted. But nowadays it's like, dude, them squats.
Yeah, no, that's like the end all be all. Like that's like the pinnacle of beauty in terms of a female.
If we're really,
they have, like even, a certain shaped thigh and ass and everything like that.
even dudes, my roommate Ninja, when I worked with him at the fine dining restaurant,
yeah,
the girls there would all be like, look at that.
Yeah, well, do girls love a nice ass on a guy?
He's got a bubble butt.
Yeah, he's got a nice ass, man.
And I'd be sitting there like, I was sitting there laughing because they're like, what do you think is funny? I'm like, I make fun of him for that all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's universal. Yeah, I guess
don't think I'm a bully. I'm not bullying my roommate.
It's about those two spheres.
Because he's the one that taught me martial arts and he'll beat me up, so.
Yeah, bro, watch out. But yeah, in terms of you know, the next aspect of sacred geometry, we have these things called the seed of life, the fruit of life, and the flower of life. And before we go into this, you know, in terms of like the five Platonic solids that we did mention not too long ago, you can also say like the sphere would be like the, you know, the element of spirit, you know, the symbol of eternity or the infinite or God in general, everything and nothing, you know, just like the infinite loop. So we can kind of see the sphere as like a 3D version of that. And, even just take a circle. You can just take a circle and that can be described as maybe God's first cycle. And before we get into the seed of life, which is like the most elementary aspect of the three that I just mentioned there, say from like a metaphysical point of view, you can say that, the all-pervasive, infinite, nothingness, everything, all potential, mind of God, might have started by having meditating on like a focal point within its nothingness. Then you have like that could be symbolized by like a dot. And then the next motion would be from that dot was to make a line from that dot outward. So then you have a line. And then from that line, you would connect the end of that line all the way back around to the end of the line. So you would have a circle. And that would kind of be God's first like inhalation. That'd be like God's first inhalation. And so then you have a circle. I mean, from there, God could have, this is hard to describe. This is why it's really important to look these things up. The first thing I'm getting to is the seed of life, in case anyone's looking these things up on Google for a visual. Say we have the circle, and then we have God chooses a point on the edge of that circle and makes that the center point for another circle. And so then you have these two inner conjoining circles, which looks like the vesica Pisces, which is
represented by the number two.
Yeah, number two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The first circle is number one, and then the second circle is mm-hmm. number two.
Yeah. That would be the second circle, and that would be like the vesica Pisces. And that right there is kind of a sacred geometrical form. It could be symbolic of the divine feminine. I mean, you can kind of like see how that would be if you look at it a little bit. It could be symbolic of duality, the second day in Genesis. And then from there, it just keeps making more circles around that center circle to the point where there'll be six circles surrounding the center circle, kind of intertwined. And that can kind of stand for the 7 days of creation in Genesis. It could stand for just how many prominences seven has in general. Like the white light going through the prism transmit the seven different colors, you know, the seven sounds of the chromatic scale in the music. scale. You know, just sevens all over the place. And yeah,
that's also the pattern that, like, if you repeat it and, like, it interconnects, isn't that the one that it can wrap any form?
Oh, in terms of what?
There's a certain, I think it's that one. There's a pattern, like, because, like, you have that seven circles. Mm-hmm. And then, like, if you go to the outer edge and then you do another seven circle.
Yeah.
You can wrap a form with it and it'll always line up correctly or something like that.
Yeah. So you have the seedolith, and then what you were saying. So say there's that center circle, then you have the six circles surrounding that center circle, and we can just call that the seedolith, and that's 7 days of creation. So six circles around one, and that can even be similar in embryology to our own personal life. In embryology, our embryo, when we're forming in the mother's womb, it starts out the same process with like a sphere in the middle. And then it starts turning in, it starts having these spheres that surround that center sphere to the point where it looks like the seed of life exactly. If you guys look this up, like the seed of life embryo, or like seed of life human embryo on Google, like you'll see exactly what I'm saying. And our inception into this world starts out in sacred geometrical forms. So this is like one little instance as to how everything kind of stems from all these same principles. In terms of coming into manifestation, and then we have the flower of life, and that's essentially what CJ was saying. You have more circles around those six circles that are already around the center, you know, and you can add an infinite amount of circles around that, and keep going and going and going, in a concentric circles of circles around the center, and keep going. But you know, like it's the traditional basic flower of life has like 17 circles around one. With a circle around all those circles. And that can kind of be seen as like creation and unity of all. And within there, you could fit the Kabbalistic tree of life perfectly. You could fit pretty much all geometric shapes within that flower of life as well. And all these are very beautiful and very basic symbols. And from the flower of life, you can eventually take this glyph that's within the flower of life to some degree. And you'll have a center circle in the middle, and then offshooting. I mean, this is hard to describe, but so if you're on Google, if you type in fruit of life, there's a center circle, like we had talked about during all these things. And the circle starts out everything. And then you have two circles that stem out from that middle circle above, two circles that stem out from that middle circle below, and then in four directions around it. So there's six sets of two spheres that go around that center sphere to the point where it looks like a hexagon to some degree, and it has 13 circles in all, 12 that surround the center circle and the circle in the middle. And I know this probably sounds very convoluted and hard if you don't have a visual, but I'm trying my best with what I have. And in this fruit of life, that's where we get what we would call Metatron's cube. And you get Metatron's cube from that fruit of life by connecting every single circle to every other circle with lines. And when you connect every single circle to every other circle with lines, then you pretty much have this glyph. I'm pretty sure a lot of you guys are probably privy to Metatron's cube, but if not, it's beautiful. I would definitely highly suggest checking it out if not.
You want to see like a really basic form of that, you can look at our logo.
Yeah, to some degree.
It's like the foundation of it. It's not.
Yeah.
It's nowhere near the complete thing, but it's the kind of like what we do. Like we do a lot of foundational concept on this show.
Yeah.
That's a foundational concept of the cube.
It really is. There's a hexagon there. There's a cube there, and that unravels other things. And there's the seven circles, and then there's the 12 sections of white for the zodiac. Yeah. So I mean, it is a very basic glyph. All you have to really do in order to make it fruit of life esque is like to add six more circles around the middle of that center circle, and then you have the circles on the outside. Then there would be 12 circles around the one, and then it would essentially be a version of the fruit of life, our own logo. Yeah. So yeah, totally even think about that right now. It's like one of the most obvious ones to use in terms of an example.
Look at our logo.
Now.
Meditate on it.
Yeah, I mean it's definitely not a bad thing to meditate on. And yeah, so once you have Metatron's cube, then once you have that glyph, when you connect all the lines to all the circles, then you can see how every single Platonic solid fits inside Metatron's cube, the sphere and all the other five Platonic solids fit exactly inside that Metatron's cube glyph. And so that's why it's revered as being so sacred, because it pretty much contains the blueprint to everything in existence on a metaphysical level. And who first discovered this Metatron's cube was actually a, I think he was medieval. He was some type of a mathematician or some type of artist. But his name was Leonardo Pisano. He went by other names as well. But one of his most commonly known names is Fibonacci. So this Fibonacci guy who, you know, made the Fibonacci sequence really popular, which we'll get into in a little bit, also discovered Metatron's cube. So this guy was of huge significance, probably more so due to Metatron's cube, but at least bringing it to the light, because as we see in ancient cultures, I'm pretty sure they had knowledge of this stuff to some degree as well. Just kind of like how we claim that we discovered, like, pi and all those things in recent times when it was used during the pyramid constructions, which happened like 15,000 years ago.
Wait, it's a pyramid. So it's Stonehenge.
Yeah, Stonehenge.
They recently discovered it was a society that died out, but they had like a grand dining hall where they had these areas set up where they would put stores of food for grand feasts at the end of a season, and these storage areas followed sacred geometry really well. And these are like Neolithic, so these are old. So we may not have a written record, but we do have a physical record. Mm-hmm. If we look at when we stopped being so nomadic,
yeah,
and we started like little villages and small cities and whatnot. Even like this is some guy in Scotland recently. He was working and he found a like 6,000-year-old village or something like that in his property. And it's like a huge archaeological site now. But there's like this outer area. It's like a big circle, and then it disperses underground in symmetrical lines. It's actually really neat. So
wow, that's awesome. And that's why it's like hard to really determine like when this stuff became official, because like what you're saying, like you can find all these you can find these geometric shapes and displays and how they utilize it.
I think
forever,
for a long time. I really feel like it's something that's always been. Like if you were to ask me like my personal thought on it, something that's always been, because think about us humans as ourselves, minus say like abstract artists or whatever, but humans in general are very drawn to symmetry. And
patterns,
things that are organized and even.
Yeah.
And like, you know, if you walk past a photograph or a picture on your wall and it's crooked, you straighten it.
Yeah.
You know, so like the idea of these patterns and the sacred geometry, really, it had to have been in us forever. And that's concept somebody else came up with. I was reading online. Somebody had said, you know, that the sacred geometry is a tool that's found within us to begin with, and it follows the process of as within, so without.
Yeah, I can totally see how it would be that, especially if consciousness is based off of, you know, geometry to some degree, you know, which inhabits everything. And I don't know if, you know, like if DMT activates these things in the mind, or certain, like there's various cases and meditations where people like are in deep meditation and they come upon either their pineal gland being activated, DMT being released in their brains, or some other functioning happening where they get visions of geometric shapes. So it's already, you know, within them somewhere. It's just like hidden behind the veil of I guess just ordinary experience. But yeah, it's fascinating stuff. I mean, so it's just an inherent faculty and inherent, you know, I guess it's just a part of the nature of reality. So it's perfect for metaphysics. In terms of spirituality, we can find sacred geometry in Buddhist cultures and Hinduism. In Hinduism, the mandalas originate in either the Hindu culture or the Buddhist culture. But nonetheless, you can find sacred geometry being utilized, or just geometry in general being utilized in mandalas, which means circles in Sanskrit.
To be fair, Hinduism and Buddhism are hand in hand.
They are hand in hand, yeah. Buddhism stemmed from Hinduism, so they're just kind of father-son. They're running the same family.
Right.
To some degree. And one of the most popular geometric forms in terms of one used for, you know, centering the self, or how a man equates to the universe, or, you know, just good for stability of mind, is the Sri Yantra. We spoke about that before in a previous episode. And that's one that's heavily used in Hinduism. It's a really common glyph. It deals a lot in interlocking triangles. So anyone who's seen the Sri Yantra, or even if you look it up, it's spelled S-R-I space, and Yantra, Yantra.
Is that the one that it's three triangles and...
Yeah.
Well, oh, that's the Nordic...
Yeah. Okay. I know you're talking about that, but ironically, yeah, it's like there's like three downward triangles, and there's like three upward triangles interlacing, and there's like a triangle in the middle, and that's pretty much okay. Just for Yantra. It's hard to describe, but there's like seven triangles or more involved in it. So yeah, and even in cymatics is which is pretty much how you have like say like sand on top of like a certain metal sheet or something like that, and then you vibrate the side of the sheet with something to a certain note. So then when that happens, when this note is struck onto that sheet, a certain geometric form is formed on top of that metal sheet in the sand or whatever medium's up there. So every single note forms a certain shape within the sand.
You do it with water, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, the same thing would be done with water and how different frequencies change the geometries or the symmetries of water. So I mean, it's just telling you how the harmony of there has to be some underlying harmony of all existence, if sacred geometry and geometric forms are the underlying foundation of all things. So that means everything, at least at its fundamental level, is in harmony.
You think maybe that's why we're as drawn to crystals as we are?
Yeah, I mean, I think crystals are kind of like inherent in terms of like just that the colors might resonate with certain things involved with our chakra systems or our auras or things that we need healing in. And also, like a lot of crystals are six-sided. There's different.
Well, I mean, crystals. I've seen crystals in cubes. I've seen them in six sides. I've seen them in five.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But there's always a crystal. It's a crystalline structure.
Yeah.
Which always follows some sort of it's a geometry that repeats itself in various scales depending on how large the crystal is.
Yeah.
But certain types of crystals like will always form the same crystalline structure if they're in from the same area, mm-hmm. type of thing.
Yeah, you know, 100%. I think that's definitely a big reason why we're drawn to them, amongst other things. And also, I think it's a big reason why we're drawn to nature in general, because not only do we feel like connected to nature on a certain level in terms of, you know, our earthly element, being a human being, but you know, all throughout nature, you just look at any flower or any leaf, or you know, it starts from the seed, which can be like the dot. Then you have like the stem, or you'll plant a seed within the soil, and the soil can be like the nothingness, like the all nothing, the all pervasive nothingness mind of God before time, and then like that spawns the roots, so it forms an idea, and then it spawns the stem coming out of that, which can be the line. And instead of like a circle, then it starts forming like the leaves and the different shapes coming out the top. And eventually it has a certain color and a certain scent. And all those leaves and petals has certain shapes to them that intertwine with each other. And all the leaves have certain shapes. And depending if it's a tree or any type of flower, there's always shapes and geometry involved in all of it. And that's like the fundamental, that's the most fundamental aspect of nature. And then you see like the spheres of the planets, and we're going to get into the Fibonacci sequence in a little bit here, but you know, even in galaxies, you'll see certain things that we'll talk about, and it's just found all over the place, and it's just fascinating that these geometric forms and once perceived a certain way, you just kind of realize that you're kind of just like a color or a shape. You're just kind of like a certain shade of nature that kind of blends into everything else and just has its own piece to the puzzle, you know, when you really start to see the patterns behind everything in existence and how it can kind of link up or how they're all united. It's just different level of viewing everything. You kind of feel, you just view everything a lot more sacred, like a lot more connected.
I mean, you can break everything down into those shapes.
Yeah.
And it'll fit. And
yeah.
It's pretty interesting. I see a lot of sacred geometry tattoos. It's a very popular tattoo.
I know a bunch of people have sacred geometry tattoos. I actually plan on getting some sacred geometry tattoos. I mean, I already have the five platonic souls tattooed on me, around the as above, so below star David symbol. I already have that stuff, but on my body as well. I kind of eventually want to get like some type of Metatron's cube or something involving that thing as well. I know it just really resonates with me. Of course it does. I mean, it resonates with anybody, especially if they have an open mind to it. You know?
Yeah, I think every person that I've ever seen with a sacred geometry tattoo, I'm like, oh, that's sacred geometry. And they're like, oh, yeah, it is. Like, and then they want to talk about it. And yeah. I've always been like, I do not have 2 hours right now.
Like, yeah, okay, we got it. It's a triangle with another triangle. It's a sphere. It's a circle. Makes up everything. We got you, man. I got to go, dude.
Like, when people get that this particular tattoo, like, yeah. I haven't really met anybody who's just gotten it for the sake of getting it. Because, you know, some people do that with tattoos.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like, oh,
yeah.
I like that. I'm getting that. Yep. I'm like, whatever. Nothing wrong with that. But, like, with this particular tattoo, it always seems like whoever's getting it at least knows something about it. Like, there's a reason they're getting it.
Yeah, I feel like even if it's very superficial, like if they're in their understanding of it, they at least kind of like feel a resonation, like a resonation with it, like that something that resonates within that, like, okay, like they feel something inherently powerful or some type of connection to these shapes. And just, you know, putting on the body or, you know, getting more intimate with it kind of brings them more in harmony with the world around them and things maybe that they're not too tapped into. So I don't know, but. Yeah, it is cool how it's becoming a growing thing, you know, as with all areas of spirituality right now.
Yeah. Really, like, one of the big concepts within sacred geometry is that golden ratio you brought up earlier.
Yeah, the golden ratio. I think the golden ratio, like, in actuality, is 1 over 1.6803 with a bunch of numbers after that as well, which translates into the golden number, which is 1.618 at standard, or, you know, a lot of people can use, like, 1.68803. These go into the Fibonacci sequence as well, which can be seen and can go beyond the golden rectangle, which utilizes these same golden ratios. And the golden rectangle is kind of like you have like a rectangle and you section off a rectangle within that rectangle and there's a square. And that rectangle you section off can be filled in with the rectangle that you cut off. It's hard to describe on a microphone. But once again, I said, you know, if you can Google golden rectangle, it's a lot more easy to understand what I'm saying.
They say that the golden ratio likes to use a lot of the pentagon, pentagram, decagon, and dodecahedron.
Interesting.
And like it establishes a correspondence of the small to the large and then the large to the whole.
Okay. Yeah, I could totally see how that would work. Yeah, I wonder if like the significance is between sacred geometry, or at least the shapes, and the spiral, how that would play out. I mean, of course, I'm no expert mathematician here.
We should get for part two.
Yeah,
let's see if we can get an expert mathematician.
Yeah, I would really like to, because this is something I really really would like to delve into like exponentially a lot more. It's not an area that had fully drawn me to like to the depths and depths of it yet.
My brain matter will be leaking out of my ears by the time that conversation is done, but I think
it'll be
cool.
Great.
I think
we'll just soak it back up.
Mathematician guest the show.
Yeah, so if there's any mathematicians listening or anyone who's like really really steeped in sacred geometry, you know, shoot us a message, you know, on all our platforms that we usually shout out.
Yeah, because obviously our knowledge of this is fairly limited, mm-hmm. but it is important.
Yeah, that's definitely why we're doing like a fundamental show first before we're like really like, yeah, okay, this is the professional view of everything, like, and this is how it all interconnects.
Yeah, and it was a lot to study over the course of a week to try to figure out like how much of it we want to talk about.
Yeah,
and, you know, like what we were looking for. So, you know, if somebody, you know, for part two, who knows when part two is going to be, but it could be a month from now, it could be 2 months, whatever. But there's going to need to be a part two. But if you're really steeped into it, you know, hit us up on mystery.stone.podcast@gmail.com or the same with the Instagram.
Yeah. And at the very end of this episode, I'm going to quickly go over the basics, you know, the fundamentals, you know, which is the title of everything we covered, and maybe things for you guys to go check out on your own and discover more about these concepts. Because like we were saying a couple of times, like we just want to get out the basics of these things, like the ones that are really known, the ones that are really out in the open, and that really provide a really, really good foundation for further exploration and understanding your connectedness to the greater whole. And the last thing I kind of want to talk about is what CJ brought up. The Fibonacci sequence, you know, the golden spiral, things that we're getting into before. So it does deal with the golden ratio, the golden number, as we said, 1.618, the golden rectangle. And the golden number is also symbolized by phi, which is a Greek letter, actually. It's kind of like a circle with a line down the middle of it. There's also another form to make it, but it's hard to describe here. And this golden spiral can be found anywhere between plants such as like the sunflower. You can find it in seashells. What's that one shell called? What's that one shell called? There's this one shell that they have. Nautilus shell. you guys have probably seen a lot of people either wearing a Nautilus shell, or you might have seen them in metaphysical shops, but that's there's a bigger reason why that's displayed there, and that's like a perfect view in nature of what the golden spiral looks like. So you can see in the Nautilus shell, you can see in human beings and the proportions of the fingers and the proportions of the face and the proportions of the body. You can find it in other living creatures. You can find it in the spiral motion of galaxies. And you can pretty much find it all over the place. And the Fibonacci sequence has a certain sequence, of course, and usually starts off with adding the numbers, the newest number and the last number in sequence and adding it together and then keep on going. But in basic form, the Fibonacci sequence from zero is thus. First it goes 0, 1, then 1, then 2, then 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, 34, 55, etc. And it keeps going bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And what I meant by the additions was, if you start with 0 and then you have 1, and you add 0 and 1 together, you get 1. So in the beginning, it's 0, 1, 1, then it goes 2. Because then you add the 1 and 1 together, and then you get 2. And then you add the 2 and the 1 together, and you get 3. Then you add the 3 and the 2 together, and you get 5. And you keep adding the newest number with the previous number you had, and you just keep going up and up and up and up and up. And that fits inside the golden rectangle as this perfect spiral that now precedes a lot of the evolution of the universe, or how a lot of things are held in form. And that was attributed to Fibonacci as well, that Leonardo Pisano guy. But, you know, apparently he wasn't the actual one to discover it. And it was actually found earlier in like 200 BC in a work by a guy named Pingala. So it's interesting how like this Fibonacci sequence that is like one of the most hallmark and like mainstream like ideas in terms of the area of sacred geometry, like even people who aren't heavy into metaphysics or things along these lines of life, I've heard of that before. And it's just ironic that, you know, that Fibonacci himself wasn't the one who discovered that. So, but nonetheless, it's the Fibonacci sequence. So that's pretty much the last major fundamental thing I have in terms of sacred geometry.
Man, it's been a lot so far this episode.
Yeah, it's very tedious. And yeah, in terms of the viewers, I did my best on my part to describe how everything looks. That's why I was hoping there might be some type of like visual for you guys to have or something like that. But nonetheless,
there was one other number sequence that I saw. I don't remember what it was called. I didn't write it down because I was like, you know, we're kind of doing like a foundational work and this is complicated.
Yeah.
I forget what it's called, but it was, I think it was 111.111 times 111.111. I think that's what it was. Huh. Could have been 4 ones on each side. But anyway, when you multiply them together, it goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Oh, I think I've seen something like that before. And I don't, it's kind of like a pyramid like scheme. Yeah.
Yeah. And it goes with the tetragon or, oh man. I'm like, yeah, I did great.
The
geometry.
Gonatre. Yeah,
and,
whatever it is.
Oh man. No, we talked about a whole lot of math and now my brain is all over the place. But I kind of felt like I would bring that up for, cause I just think it's kind of interesting. It's something that's neat.
Yeah, we're like trying to come together and mash up what we have, you know what I mean? So it's always fun to create a mosaic out of our knowledge. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you're going to get into a line of mathematics, this is an interesting line, because eventually you take sacred geometry all the way up to quantum physics on a level.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's all relative, and especially if someone who's like really interested in the makeup of reality, of existence, of their own self, of their own consciousness, of energy, and how it all works, sacred geometry is definitely the place to start. It's kind of intimidating when investigating it in the beginning, so that's why I'm going to go over everything we just spoke about here in a succinct manner here at the very end, so you guys can, you know, do more research if you guys haven't already heard of these things in the meantime. But yeah, ever since I've known about sacred geometry or studied it a little bit back in the day, and you know, got into it to the extent that I have, it's definitely personally altered my view of everything in existence. It really has, in some degree. I'm not saying it made my existence better. It definitely made my perception of existence a lot better. It had a really interesting subconscious way of like uniting all the strata and layers of existence, and really seeing how everything in front of me truly is made of proportions and mathematics and organized mathematics, and how there really isn't too much chaos inherent in the universe. It's more so just it's all an organized flow of happenings. And just because we have the ability to experience and are able to label things and are able to perceive things in the illusion of duality and separation, that we kind of perceive chaos happening. But when you look on a deeper level and see what everything's made up of, you know, say like all this mathematical form and the programs of existence and how existence is allowed to exist for this long without imploding on itself. And there is definitely an underlying fundamental layer of harmony happening. And the way that you can accurately feel that on an internal level, or how it can resonate with you, or how it resonated with me, is by studying these aspects here of geometry and learning to see it within myself and within other people, within nature all around me, within galaxies, within the universe. And you start to just see how everything kind of relates to each other in a certain degree, how everything is a sibling of one another, or just the inherent connectedness between, the symbols that we can perceive, the unified universe. And it just brings it all together to some degree. So I really feel like it subconsciously helped me and consciously helped me to view everything in a much unified and mystical way. Whereas before, like, you just kind of see a flower or a tree or, you know, a cup or, you know, like a galaxy. And it is just what you taught in school, just that, some mundane thing, and you get used to it. But when you really see the foundation and the happenings behind it and how often you come across that, and it's like, oh, okay, there's something happening here. Like there's a pattern here I didn't know that was happening this whole time.
It's just a random thought on the subject. If you're in a mental state where you desperately need to make sense out of life and what it is, and this might be like a really even therapeutic way to start making sense out of existence to yourself.
Yeah. 100% agree. Especially if you're into meditation. Even meditating on the Sri Yantra, that one we spoke about in Hinduism, that's a big one that a lot of people like to meditate on. I personally like to meditate on it. I need to meditate on it more. It's very interesting. It really brings you into a certain harmonic mental state. And even Metatron's Cube, or I would definitely suggest, in terms of meditation, Metatron's Cube is a great one. Flower Life's a great one. Seed of Life, Fruit of Life, the Five Platonic Solids. But definitely Metatron's Cube is an awesome one to meditate on, especially if you have like a visual in front of you. It's just, you know, geometry in general, even if you're making it yourself, it really brings you into like an altered state. Like it really brings you into more of a trance, and it's, I don't know, it brings you more into a very spiritual space in your mind. So yeah, it's a good idea.
Yeah. If you think about it, I had a kid's toy when I was very young. It's like six.
Mm-hmm.
And you would put a piece of paper on, it was almost like a turntable. It would hold it there and then it would spin at like 300-400 RPM, something like this.
Yeah.
Fast. And then you had like a compass almost. It's like a pencil tool.
Mm-hmm.
And you would apply it to the paper as it spun. And depending on where you placed it, it would form symmetrical, geometric shapes, very reminiscent to the circles we were talking about before, the seven.
Yeah, the seed of life. Yeah, the seed of life, like, and all that stuff.
Even that stuff, like, and I loved that toy as a kid.
Yeah, it's like, well, you kind of wonder why. It's like it like spoke to something in you, right?
Maybe. Not. I really, really liked creating these super symmetrical and complicated pictures, mm-hmm, with this toy.
Hmm.
My friends, they would come over, they would mess with it too. Like I don't think any of my little friends when I was a kid hated that thing. I think everybody pretty much enjoyed playing with that.
It's like, little did they all know that they were like little gods constructing their own little beginning of their universe on that page, yeah, like, or whatever.
It really was like it's in everything.
Yeah.
You know, and like you're drawn to it, whether you realize it or not, you're drawn to it.
Mm-hmm.
I personally appreciate symmetry. I love symmetry.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yep.
It makes me feel so good inside when things are symmetrically lined up and nice and even. And if there's a square on this side, there needs to be a square on that side. And like,
yeah, it's like the design of it. It's like perfect design. And even all my art pieces and everything I like to do, I was always obsessed with symmetry, like just getting it down right and having the side symmetrical, or else like having a certain symmetrical flow to everything. And mm-hmm, when you really get in tune to that, you know, like, oh, I can see how this translates to the creation of the universe, you know, and just how different shapes You know, in a lot of my drawings, I like to start with like a certain random shape that I, you know, just put on the page just out of nowhere that might have like a certain type of personality to it. Then I'll just like branch off that shape with a different type of shape and that complements it and just keep going from there and there and there and there. And, it, you know, you can kind of see how if there was an architect of the universe, you know, how he would kind of do the same thing and how we're like having that mini experience of it. If, you know, who any artists out there who utilize shapes to start art. So, you know, it's just it's fascinating stuff. It's really weird when you get into it too.
Yeah, like you start realizing like, oh, it's there. Oh, it's there.
It's like, oh, it's everywhere.
It's I've been doing it the entire time.
Yeah.
And like your human brain does really complex forms of it.
Yeah.
All the time. And like you don't realize it.
No.
And like I realized that just looking up like the basic concepts of this so we could record this episode today.
Mm-hmm.
It was like that the whole concept of that super shallow concept incorporating something so deep kind of got me excited. Like, wow, like this is incredible.
Yeah, it really is incredible. And it's just, I hope that the listeners really took something away from this and was able to like accurately kind of see the shapes a little bit in their head to some degree, you know, if they didn't have a visual. But aside from that, you know, there's always time later on to do that. And just to summarize everything, the primary things that I want to highlight during this episode in terms of maybe things for you guys to later to branch off and look into more in depth, are the fundamentals, which include the five Platonic solids, of course, the tetrahedron, the hexahedron, the octahedron, the dodecahedron, and that icosahedron, which, you know, all those things fit into Metatron's cube. Metatron's cube is a massive one to look into. Then you have the forms that Metatron's cube kind of stems from or can be put into. That's the seed of life, which is a basic version. You have the flower of life, which is a more complex version of the seed of life. And the fruit of life, which is the grid that, you know, eventually forms a Metatron's cube. Those are extremely fundamental. And if you guys haven't seen these before or heard of them, or at least if you guys haven't heard of them before, taking a glance online and looking at these things, I'm sure you probably have seen them somewhere. And you'll be like, oh, wow, I've seen that before. They've become really popular in terms of mainstream spirituality to some degree, or if you're into spirit science, at least. The Vesica Pisces, that's pretty prominent. Has a lot of attributes, depending on how you're looking at it or how you're taking it. Just recognizing that in embryology, in our becoming a human being, in its most basic form in the womb, does start off as the egg, a sphere, and does turn out looking like the seed of life, with more spheres around that center sphere, kind of like a cube. Oh, wow, yeah. Well, that's from Dungeons & Dragons?
Those are D&D dice, yeah.
Yeah, so CG has actually shown me a picture of a lot of the dice for Dungeons & Dragons, and yeah, it looks like, I think except for one or two of them, one, two, three. Yeah, so yeah, five of those are the Platonic solids, and two of them I guess are just different dye. But yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah,
it's
10-sided. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. It's weird to see this stuff and just that like all the different areas you can find it.
Yeah, this is one of my vendors in the Discord server.
Oh, those are beautiful. Yeah, he's showing me certain dye for Dungeons and Dragons, like different colors. And,
yeah,
I had no idea that the Platonic solids were in the dye for that game. That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna get started on that game at some point. Check it out. See what the hype's about.
I think they also use those dye for divination purposes.
Throwing lots. You call it throwing the lots or something like that.
I don't remember, but it's in that wonderful book we always talk about that's downstairs. It is 100% for divination purposes. Okay. They use the Platonic solids.
That's fascinating. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, then we have it's understanding our. The fruit of life, or like I was saying, like the seed of life in terms of embryology that forms us, sacred geometry found in mandalas, and how cymatics is the science of how sound organizes or equates to geometric shape. And essentially, like, it's interesting because geometry, I forget who made this quote, but geometry is frozen sound. It's sound in suspension, because every sound creates a geometric form. So anytime that you're And you can kind of see how this can kind of be healing for like the mind or a certain ailment. If you're into like, you know, binaural beats or sound healing or things along those lines, or what note lines up with certain chakras or certain imbalances in your mind, because if these shapes or geometric forms all equate to a certain sound that's suspended for a visual, you can see how like looking at geometric forms or how one might resonate with you more than the other might show you maybe something that you need to be looking at more in terms of like healing, or maybe something that's in your personality that's more dominant, that which is why it's resonating with you. Or if it's something that you feel drawn to, maybe it's just something that is a certain type of healing modality that you would never even think would ever be used, you know, like looking at a shape. But you can see how that can potentially align any imbalances in the mind if it's you know, since it's equated to a sound. And of course, all those things that we mentioned in nature, that a lot of these things translate to, and definitely the golden ratio and the Fibonacci sequence. So all those things I just mentioned there are of extreme importance and are probably some of the most are the most foundational and fundamental elements of sacred geometry. And for the future, I'm looking forward to delving into these things a lot more, not only for myself, but for all you guys as well, because this stuff gets really intricate, and we can really branch off into a lot of other areas, as we've seen with like Da Vinci was obsessed with sacred geometry to some degree. He has pages upon pages and dedicated to sacred geometry. A lot of his art, he utilized sacred geometry. The golden ratio is found all over the place in the Mona Lisa. And there's all types of hidden things involved in his paintings as well. With the Last Supper painting especially. But yeah, so, and Da Vinci himself called the golden number or the golden rectangle the divine proportion. So you can see the lineage of these things between a lot of prominent traditions and just history in general, nature, and prominent men who are of a higher learning, just how prominent that this subject has been to these guys. So hopefully that kind of lightens you guys a little bit to the significance and importance of this topic. And yeah, that's what we got for you tonight. Hopefully you enjoyed.
Yeah.
Hopefully it was clear or as lucid as possible once more.
Yeah, and all those things Mike mentioned, but you'll still be researching them by the time we do a part two for this.
Yeah, and so will we.
Yeah, 100%. So that's all I have to add to that.
Yeah, a lot of these concepts were things I'd been introduced to like years and years ago in terms of like the fundamentals, but in terms of getting deeper and deeper into it, that's a whole other course. So
yeah, I mean, that's... math, not my strong suit. I have a defensive mechanism called comedy that I go to. So I don't really have anything else to add to that.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, if you guys want to reach out to us, hit us on mystery.stone.podcast@gmail.com. And the same thing for Instagram. Mike, you have your personal Instagram.
Yeah, so in terms of Instagram, for the podcast, it's mystery.stone.podcast, and my own personal Instagram is the.omniscient.void. If you have any personal questions for me or would like to check out my personal work, or just any questions for us in general, you can message us on any of those platforms, and whenever we have the time, we will be glad to get back to you. And yep. So, yeah, we really appreciate you listening, as always, to this episode and everything else that we have, or any time that you've given to us, really appreciate it. Thank you so much. You know, same old speech, but it means a lot to me, and of course CJ as well.
Absolutely. And if you're looking for my upload schedule, I don't remember it every week, but I try to get an upload schedule posted on Tuesdays to let you know what the episode's going to be on Sunday. You can follow me on Twitter @BearlandStu. And yeah, thanks for listening, everybody, and we really appreciate it, and we're looking forward to the next episode.
Yes, thank you guys so much.
Yeah, blessed be.
Take care.